Asked in a very gentle and non-aggressive way by Mary to remind everyone that you have to pay for dinner before you go to dinner. And you need to pay Mary before you go to dinner. And the fee is 50 US or, what is it, Mary? 63 Singapore.
No. $100 bill would be great.
Do you accept credit cards?
3% surcharge.
You're going to have fun tonight, Mary. It's going to be tough. Okay, so please, councillors, come back to the room. If I can ask staff to stop chatting amongst themselves. And we will start.
To begin recording the program. When you are finished, hang up to stop recording. This call will now be recorded.
So I guess that means we can start. So welcome back, everyone. There's one more part. What does that actually say? There's a bus. So tonight for the restaurant, there's a bus leaving from this hotel, the Swiss Hotel, the lobby, at... outside the Swiss Hotel lobby at 8:15, and it's coming back at 10:30. So try and be around the lobby just before 8:15 so we can all get on the bus. Okay, so our next session deals with the work that the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group has been doing, and more specifically the recommendations that came out of that work and went to the council. We have been provided with a list of those recommendations, and I'm going to ask Marika to take us through that list. It's up on the screen there. It's, I think, yes, it is up on Adobe as well. So there are all the recommendations are in a different stage of work. Some of them are still in progress. Some of them we're waiting for. Staff to continue working on them. Some of them have some kind of consensus on them from the group, but I will ask Marika to take us through each one and give us the detail on each one and where we're at on each of these recommendations. So Marika, if you can do that now, please.
Thanks, Stefan. I actually have some printed copies as well for those that like to look at it on paper, so I'll pass them around. As said, it's indeed it'll be connected also here on the screen. Because basically at the council meeting in May, I gave a brief overview of the RAP recommendations and basically divided them into a number of categories, which I think might facilitate the council's reviews of those recommendations that are still outstanding. So if you look at the first page, there's a category that's titled like recommendations the council has already acted upon and are in progress. So the first one is a discussion paper on best practices, which we'll be talking about later today. So that's one that staff is working on. And the second one on the list is the cyber squatting recommendation one. That's the issue report on the UDRP. And Marjorie will be talking about that later today as well. So those are two items that are already being worked on and don't require any specific council action at this stage. If you go to the next page under two, those are two recommendations that the council started acting on by requesting input from ICANN compliance staff as outlined in those recommendations. There was a discussion with ICANN compliance in San Francisco on the feedback provided on those two recommendations. But the council hasn't decided what next steps to take, whether they feel that these recommendations are closed, the feedback received from compliance was sufficient, or no further action needs to be taken, or whether there are any kind of steps that they would like to take, further discussion with compliance, or concrete actions in relation to those items. Especially on the second one, the fake renewal notices, you'll see later on that there actually is a conditional recommendation linked to this, in which the RAP working group actually recommended commencing a PDP by requesting an issue report on this issue if the council felt that not sufficient information or no adequate information was provided by ICANN compliance on how this issue can be addressed through enforcement action. So moving down the list in category three, there you see a long list of issues. Those are all recommendations that the council actually hasn't considered at all. I mean, you've reviewed them as part of the report, but haven't taken any action on whether going forward or not doing anything with them. But if you look on that, you can make a division as well in these recommendations, where you see that on the first page, it's all those recommendations that achieved unanimous consensus or rough consensus from the working group. And on the page afterwards, you see actually recommendations where there was no unanimous consensus or rough consensus from the working group. There was actually strong division in the last three recommendations. And there, I mean, one of the options the council could consider is that, you know, as the working group didn't achieve consensus, it's unlikely that the council would achieve consensus on these. So the council might decide to, acknowledge these recommendations but not take any action on them, highlighting the fact that, of course, any constituency or stakeholder group individually could still take items forward, either, you know, those that maybe talk about issue reports by requesting an issue report or formulating a proposal that, you know, might take certain initiatives forward. So that's just a suggestion. And then actually there's a fourth category where there's one recommendation relating to gripe sites, deceptive and or offensive domain names, where the working group actually recommended not to take any specific action at this stage. So I think that's, again, one where, you know, council can just recognize and accept the recommendation as is, but no further action is required at this stage.
Thanks very much, Marika. So as you can see, there's a list of recommendations there that I would suggest we now open the discussion by going down this list and trying to find out if anyone has a view on what action the council actually wants to take. And if you look at the first page, if we go back up to the first page and the first two items on that page, those two we probably don't need to discuss at this stage because staff are still working on those two. So I suggest that we move straight to the second page where, as Marika explained just a minute ago, there we can possibly decide to do one or two things. We can decide not to do anything, which is something that we're pretty good at, or we can decide that these recommendations, having obtained unanimous consensus from the working group, there's nothing more that the council would like to add at this stage. So perhaps I can open up just discussion on that second page of that document that we've handed out and that's up on the screen, and just to get a little feedback or a little feel for what the council wants to do on these two. Good discussion. Thanks.
Because maybe just to highlight on the first issue, because basically there it's very clear that, you know, the request was to ICANN Compliance provide information. So ICANN Compliance did provide information. I think they provided a link to a report they're doing in relation to access to Whois servers and as well their plans going forward. So I think therefore the council is just to say, you know, if they felt that information was adequate, you know, thank you very much for the information. Or if you feel that, you know, compliance isn't doing sufficient, I guess you can put in a request saying, well, you know, we think, you know, this or that should be done as well. On the second issue, the fake renewal notices, I think the feedback that compliance provided there in a nutshell is basically saying, well, there are no specific provisions in the RAA that we can use to do anything about this, because in most cases it is actually non-accredited or not accredited registrars that are sending these fake renewal notices. I think there was a discussion as well. I think some people from the IPC mentioned that, you know, one way maybe to look at this would be to, you know, if they're abusing the ICANN logo, to go after IP infringement or other ways to address it. But as it currently stands, it's an issue that, you know, might not have a very clear solution. But then again, at the same time, the RAP working group did recommend requesting an issue report on this issue to, you know, try to scope the problem and actually, you know, see whether that would fall within possible consensus policy approach or what could be done, because I think many recognized receiving many of those notices themselves that it is an issue and a problem.
With the feedback from the group and compliance, it does sound like there's not much more that the council should do on these at this stage. But as you said, if you go into the recommendations, there is detail there that you can't just decide a blank unanimous action on them all. On that page, the IPC suggestion that we look at potential IP infringements for rogue sites operating or posing as ICANN registrars might be something specific that we might want to push.
Right, I think if you look at the recommendation, I mean the fake renewal notices recommendations, the two are tied together. So there was the first one where the working group actually recognized, well, maybe there is something that compliance can do and we're not aware of it. So before we want to request an issue report to scope out the issue, we first want to get information from ICANN compliance. And based on that information, if indeed they come back saying, well, there's nothing we can do, we then recommend a PDP to scope the issue and see what kind of provisions or what kind of approach could be taken. But recognizing that, I think something that was also noted by many in the working group is indeed that even if you have a policy on fake renewal notices and might not necessarily get rid of the problem, as many notices are also sent by those that are not accredited registrars. And, of course, consensus policies only bind contracted parties with ICANN. So.
Thanks. Jonathan.
Stefan, I think my question's passed. It was I asked it before because this was about why fake renewal notices shouldn't be an issue. But I think the point here is that actually beyond registrars, those that have an interest in issuing fake renewals are those who might want to fish for credit card details. Is the issue right? Because at first sight, you would think that the only people interested in doing fake renewal notices might be someone interested in capturing the domain, but presumably the alternative to capturing the domain is capturing the customer credit card details, which is where it falls out of scope. Yeah.
Thanks. Christina.
I guess I'm still trying to get my mind around this, and this is the point that Marika just made, namely that if it's the view of compliance, and maybe I didn't understand this correctly, but if it's the view of compliance that to the best of their knowledge, the bulk of the problem is originating with entities that are not accredited registrars in the first instance. Mm-hmm. I'm not really quite sure what value there is in that case to going through the whole PDP process that isn't going to be binding on an entity that doesn't have a contract that I can in the first. I guess I don't know if I'm missing something or not, and I'm just wondering from a more quantitative perspective, whether there's really ever been anything other than just kind of anecdotal review as to how big a problem is this, who is sending these? Because if it turns out that after having done that investigation that the problem is with ICANN-accredited registrars or potentially resellers of ICANN-accredited registrars, then that's one thing. But if it turns out that it's really unrelated entities, then it takes us in a different direction. And it seems to me that given the limited resources and the limited time that we have, that it would make sense to really figure out exactly what the nature of the problem is before doing much else.
Yeah, I think that's something that we're in general agreement on, is that at this stage there's probably not enough information. We don't really know who's doing it, and that's the message that I think we got from the group as well, is to take this further at this stage is a bit difficult because there's a lack of information as to specifically what's going on. So I had Jeff Zahid. Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, so I think with the papers, if I remember correctly, the paper from compliance said that if it is a registrar or a reseller of a registrar, then they can take action. They already have the means to do so under the existing RAA. So it was basically what they were saying is for those complaints that they get from non-resellers or non-registrars, there's nothing they can do about it. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case. I mean, yeah, they can't contractually do something about it, but as I think Christina raised at a previous meeting, they could go for infringement if they're using the logo. I think ICANN could also publish a blacklist of entities that they find, sort of like, you know, if you find malware or sites out there, you could go to Google and other places to find out that these guys are on a blacklist and, you know, basically like a scam list. I think ICANN could maintain that. I'm not sure it's something that the council needs to look at because there's not really policy issues involved, but I do think there's a bunch of things ICANN compliance could do and should do. Again, it's not really a PDP, but maybe just some sessions with ICANN compliance to talk about it might be a good idea. And I think Maggie's here so she's listening to this. I don't know. We talked to her on the phone, but she's here for people. You want to raise your hand? So for those that haven't met her in person, she's here and she's listening, and I think we could have some sessions back and forth, but I don't think we should do a PDP on it.
We did all meet, Maggie, in San Francisco.
No.
Didn't we?
No. That was the registrar.
Was that a registrar thing? Okay, sorry. Getting confused. Hang on, I had Zahid next, and then you.
Hi. Dealing with the scope of the problem, of course, if there's a party which is not, that doesn't have a privity of contract with ICANN, contractual, well, compliance can't do much about it. But I think also one of the things, if I remember correctly, and could be wrong, do correct me, Marika, was also that one of the points raised by compliance was that there wasn't enough contractual teeth within the RAA to go after on this issue those that did have a contractual nexus with them, because it didn't provide for any sort of a, shall we say, obligation on this regard. And if you could correct me if I'm wrong on that. But and if that is the case, then if there was a lack of these specific provisions within the RAA, does this not mean that we should also actually have that in the new GTLD RAAs? And maybe that's going forward, looking forward, we should definitely have those sort of provisions within the new RAA for the new GTLDs. A question on IPR, when I look at these fake renewals, it says, I do see ICANN's logo on most of them. So the question I would ask compliance very simply would be that when somebody does send this to you, what actions have you taken on the IPR issue in itself? If nothing else, you don't have a contractual nexus or privity contract, has contractual compliance at least sort of gone and said, okay, ICANN will now take enforcement action against the breach of its IPR? So three very sort of various questions.
Thanks, Zahid. As we do have people from compliance here, I've asked Pam's here as well, so if you do want to come up and speak to this, that's probably helpful. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Sorry. Okay. Thank you. I think what everyone was saying was basically correct. You know, in that response from compliance, basically what you're saying, at the moment our approach is sort of reactive rather than proactive. I mean, people send these kind of emails basically as a spam, right? At the moment we don't have the new GTLD programs. There are some sites that's sending emails about pre-registration, right? So how do we stop this? It's something more, to me, a consumer protection area. If there's something that ICANN accredited registrar has done, engaged in, that is a violation of the RAA, we certainly can do something about it. But at the moment, we are only reacting to those matters that are brought to our attention. We don't just go after there, like, doing a very proactive sort of consumer alert like Jeff has suggested. We can look into that. We'll be happy to look into that. And so I think the proposal to have further discussion with compliance or further information from compliance is feasible. One word of caution is the matters that are brought to our attention, to compliance attention, probably would be kind of a drop in the ocean. How many people really, you know the existence of the of ICANN or then actually brought the matter to our attention? They'll be, to me, quite disproportionate. The matters that actually brought to our attention and those who are victims of those fake renewal notices. So I'm not saying, even if we can give you what compliance we have in the past for a certain period of time, it may not still give you the true picture, or the picture won't be representative of what the scale of the problem or nature of the problem.
Thanks, Pam. Does it sound feasible to you, for example, to work, just picking up on Jeff's idea, to work on something like a blacklist or a list of, I mean, that would fall on compliance's shoulders, I suppose, to try and dress up a list of the actors that have come to your attention that are doing this kind of thing. But I'm wondering if you're budgeted or equipped to do something like that.
That certainly is a challenge. I think we will welcome the opportunity to discuss suggestions that the community might have or GNSL council members might have. The problem is some of these laws will be subject to local jurisdiction and local laws. You know, it might be unlawful to send a particular type of email to a particular type of language in one country, may not be in another country, right? So the idea of a blacklist, you know, we can explore, but I'm saying there are certain legal complexities and issues we need to take into account. And as the report said, the REST report said, most of what they said in those fake renewal notices is actually true. It's not like it's totally untrue. They basically trick people who read that email to believe that they should pay this amount so they can renew their name and then ended up in the registrar they didn't desire in the first place.
So it is abuse, but it may not be abuse that
exactly.
you can yeah, okay.
Maybe abuse, but not unlawful, or maybe not a violation of the RAA.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, hang on. I did have a list. I had Marika next. Did you want to say something? And then Michele, Jonathan, and Zahid.
Yeah, this is Marika. We're having some issues with Adobe Connect, and the thing, there's an upgrade, and that's why people have been kicked out, and there's really nothing you can do. Because I actually wanted to raise a comment that was made in the Adobe Connect by Barry Cobb, who was a member of the working group, and I have to paraphrase, I think, what he said. It was basically like, it looks like we need data on this issue, and what other way is there to get data, if not a PDP, to really scope the issue?
Well, scope the issue first, and then a PDP, perhaps. So, Michele, sorry.
Thanks, Stefan. Michele here. Just a couple of things. As a registrar, the false renewal notice, fake renewal notices, whatever you want to call them, are a huge issue. I mean, I get a lot of complaints from our clients about this, and I would be very, very concerned if the GNSO didn't take some kind of action, even if it was just a case of suggesting that ICANN had issued an advisory notice or something. Inaction in this area, from my perspective, would actually scare me. Going to I think it's, I'm not sure about this gentleman's name, is it Zahid? Zahid, sorry. You made a couple of comments there which confused me a little bit. You're talking about new RAAs for new TLDs. I don't actually know what you're talking about.
Can I respond to that? I'm just thinking, when the new GTLD comes about, when there's going to be registry agreements, would a new RAA, would amendments in the RAA assist with this? For instance, one of the things that Pam Little in her letter sort of wrote was that, the advice you sent was that, since this is a third-party issue, resellers who are contracted with registrars, if I understand, let me read this out to you in a second. It is worth noting that ICANN cannot take enforcement action directly against a registrar's resellers or any third party if the fake renewal notices are sent by resellers or the third party. So with regard to third parties, that's fine. But when is it a reseller of a registrar? Is there an agreement between the registrar and the reseller? And if there is, could we, through the RAA, enforce the registrars to have contractual obligations between their resellers? And if this issue comes up and you find that this reseller belongs to a particular registrar, then you could take action or instruct action to the registrar to take action against the reseller, and if he doesn't, then you have action against the registrar, something like that. That happens in sort of a data protection issues, where third parties are basically controlled through these mechanisms.
You're asking, under the current RAA, can we do it?
I know that we cannot, because that's the advice that Pam has given, but if we were to go for an RA amendment, and if, especially looking at new GTLDs coming up, this would be an issue that would have to be dealt with. So I just wanted to see if Pam would think that would help. And anyway, I hope that responds.
Even under the current RAA, which is the 2009 version I'm talking to, we can enforce certain actions that conduct of a reseller through the accredited registrar, right? But there are only certain mandatory provisions that a registrar need to flow down to their resellers at the moment, and I don't believe this is one of the things that is expressly covered, right? But maybe we could. I thought there is a proposal that only ICANN accredited bodies can be the resellers. I don't think that would be feasible. We would have tens of thousands of resellers to deal with. So maybe there would be some more specific conduct about resellers that we can consider include in the newer version or next version of the IRA, right, that specifically cover these type of behavior?
Thanks. Hang on, Zaid. I'll put you back in the queue if you want to. Jeff wants to speak up on this. Christina was first. I just propose that we go over time slightly on this. It's good discussion. I don't want to interrupt it, so we'll probably go over time slightly on this topic. I had Christina next.
I agree with Barry that I think we need some more data here, but the idea of initiating a PDP for the purpose of doing that, frankly, gives me a big headache. And I guess what I would like to get a sense from is what other data collection options are there? I mean, for example, Michaeli, do you have a way, or would it be possible for when you get complaints or concerns from your customers to collate those and send those on to compliance so that they have kind of whether it's a copy of the new notice or just basic information as to the company that it came from or the like? And would that be something that, for example, the Registrar Stakeholder Group might be in a position to kind of oversee or encourage its members to really collect that information and forward it on to compliance? Because I would imagine that candidly, you know, of the various stakeholder groups, it would probably be of greatest concern and of interest to you all, and you're in the best position, I would think, to have access to that information. There may be other ways to do it, but if what I would like us to talk about is to see if there's a way to get that information in a way that would allow us to make some more informed decisions without having to first start a PDP.
No, actually, I'd rather not put you on the spot and get an answer from, there are registrar reps on the council that maybe want to, Adrian.
In principle, I don't see too much of an issue with that, and I'm not sure where Michaeli's going. I think registrars certainly are incentivised as they have an interest here. So we could certainly go away and have a chat about that and bring that up amongst our group. I don't on the surface. Michaeli, are you looking at me funny, or is that just a standard look?
Everybody has to look at you funny, Adrian,
okay,
because otherwise
you.
It just wouldn't work.
Normally there's a clown suit involved. We'll take that away and see what we can get. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, the toughest part is about the what next. You know, the data is helpful, but it's the, you know, what sort of how you wield the stick afterwards, which is going to be the tricky part. But if we can get the data and help out, then let's do that.
Right, and to the extent that part, if it's possible to do that type of information collection, and one component of information that could be collected would be, is the company from which is the entity from which the notice originates, is it a reseller? Is it, you know, a party that, as far as anyone knows, has no connection either directly to ICANN or with an accredited registrar? I mean, I think that's a really helpful piece of information for figuring out which way do we go on this.
Yeah, I think the only stumbling block could be, clearly, is if it's registrars doing it to other registrars. Then when we go back to our group, there may be some, you know, concern about, well, you know, you're only dobbing each other, you know, all of us in, and there could well be folks doing that sort of behaviour from within our stakeholder group. So that may be a little bit tricky for us to sort of navigate, but, you know, I don't see any harm in trying.
Yeah, good discussion, thanks. I will, Michaeli, I'll get back to you if you want to say something to this. I had Jeff next. Michaeli, if you want to be in the queue afterwards, Jonathan and Zahid.
So, Pam, just a quick question, just to make sure, well, a question and a comment after, make sure I heard you correctly. Under the existing RAA, if a reseller engages in activity that a registrar would not be able to engage in, you do have the authority, or do you have the authority to go after the registrar?
We would seek the registrar to intervene because we can't enforce against the reseller, right? But
right.
We would obviously reach out to registrar, say, one of your resellers is doing this and that. You should look into it.
And if the
with
registrar
it.
Didn't do anything, what would you do?
Sorry?
And if the registrar said, no, I don't want to deal with it?
I think it's a bit difficult to answer that question in a general fashion depending on what the circumstances and what the facts are.
So I don't understand why that's difficult. In other words, if a reseller engages in activity that a registrar would not be able to engage in, would violate the RAA, it should be a pretty easy answer that there's a breach of the agreement. And so what I'm hearing and what I didn't like in the tone of the letter and what I'm hearing too is that ultimately a renewal comes through a registrar. Yes, it may start with a reseller, but ultimately the name in the registry records is of the registrar. Therefore, if a reseller is doing anything that a registrar would not otherwise be allowed to do, then you have the authority to go after the registrar if it fails to take action against its own reseller. And if you don't, then that's a huge problem in the industry for all of us.
I think we might have to push this even more. We'll probably run over and take over the next session. But Michele, you were next.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, one thing that does concern me a little bit is I'm hearing people talking about making changes to the RAA in order to deal with this and other issues, whereas the RAA that's there at the moment already has a very, very clear set of conditions related to the actions of resellers, etc., just as Jeff said. The issue that I understand it, is that there's nothing in the RAA that prevents false advertising, which is basically the issue at stake here when it comes to the false renewal notices. So unless there's some way of, you know, putting an advisory from ICANN about these things might be helpful, in my personal opinion, but I'm really very, very concerned about these suggestions of making changes to the RAA to introduce things related to resellers, which actually won't make any difference because there's nothing in the RAA about this anyway.
Jonathan.
Thanks, Stefan. I suppose that for me there's two points. One is one of principle, and that's this issue of if it's within the RAA, then in some way what I thought I heard from Pam was that there was only a way in which it could be it was somehow ring fenced by the RAA. However, the issue still exists. Just because it isn't a compliance issue strictly for behaviour within the RAA doesn't mean it should be something that ICANN takes a step away from. The understanding I got was that you would enforce something if it was strictly within the bounds of the RAA, but you would leave it well alone if it wasn't. And for me, that was a cause of concern. If it was, you know, fake renewal notes, for example. So that's the one thing was the point that just because it wasn't a compliance issue per se within the RAA shouldn't mean it should be left alone. And I just wondered if you had a comment on that. And then I have a second question, Steph.
Yeah, I think that I would respond to your comment and Jeff's comment and question. Basically, when I said why it's difficult, because depending on who is sending it and where it's sending from, right? Let's say it's a reseller in, I don't know, a jurisdiction where the sending that type of email is legitimate. It's maybe misleading or deceptive to the readers, but it's legitimate. So what do you do in that circumstances, right? So I'm, that's why I say it's not easy just to say, yes, is it a violation of the RAA or not?
So I think the simple answer is I'm not talking about law as far as what the law of the jurisdiction is. If a reseller is doing something that, if the registrar were doing, would breach the agreement, then it doesn't matter what the law of the jurisdiction is. It matters that that is a violation of the agreement. In other words, you cannot subcontract to an entity to do something that you otherwise wouldn't be entitled to do.
So
forget the law about it. Forget about what the law of the jurisdiction is. It's the contract.
Sure. So, Jeff, from some of the sample notices I read, I've seen, it's not clear whether it is actually something is prohibited under the RAA. That's what I'm saying, right? And as I said, the report said most of the content is actually correct. It's just people get tricked to transfer the names out to the gaming registrar.
So that's something we may want to address as a group.
Can I... Yeah, Jonathan, you had a second point. Then I might just want to push it over to James, who was on the working group, is a registrar, and so may be able to enlighten this discussion further.
Okay, so my comment here, Stefan, is specifically to the point that Pam's made about being tricked to renew or not. For me, these renewal notices, these so-called fake renewal notices, might be driven towards one of two motivations. One is securing the renewal of the domain name by to another registrar, and the other is simply phishing for credit card details. Now, it's clear that if it was simply phishing for credit card details, that's outside of the remit of the RAA per se. But my point one is that I think that ICANN still can't afford to ignore that simply because it's outside of a compliance issue with the RAA. However, the minute that there's a renewal involved, it must by definition involve some form of entity within the contracted party chain, and it is a compliance issue. So it's either driving towards a renewal, in which case it's very firmly within the compliance area, or it's not driving towards a renewal, in which case it's still an area of concern for ICANN, even if it's not strictly a compliance issue per se.
Thanks, Jonathan. James, do you want to just say a few words from the working group, and then I'll get back in the queue. Thanks, Dave, for
your
patience.
Thanks, Stefan, and hopefully we can put some clarity in this, or probably, just irreparably make it even more confusing. But we struggled with this issue quite extensively on the working group, as you might imagine. This is not a simple issue as it might appear initially on the surface. I think that going back to Christina's original point, we need some data, we need some definitions, we need some help with this issue that would have to come in front of any work with compliance or any work on drafting new policies or initiating PDPs. I think that's getting carts way in front of horses. I think that the registrar stakeholder group can help with this in terms of drafting maybe some definitions about what they're seeing because it impacts their customers. I think that the key element of this that we came upon was deception. These folks sending out these messages are not dumb. They are putting all of their full disclosures in there in tiny one-point fonts on the backside at the bottom margin of these documents. So these are very deceptive but yet still technically legitimate messages that are going out there. So I think perhaps going back to, I think, Stefan, it was one of your earlier statements about let's maybe put this on the plate of the registrar stakeholder group and get their ideas and thoughts about how we can put some boundaries around this and go forward.
Thanks very much, James. That's helpful. So in the queue then I had Zahid, Adrian, Michele again, I think, and Jamie. So, Zahid.
Thank you. Well, at least I guess we can all agree that there are issues that are coming out of this, and there seems to be a level of some agreement, some disagreement, definitely merits some work to be done in this area. What's interesting is that we're now discussing, well, what is fake, and what is legal, what is not legal. And I think I agree with Pam, looking at some of the notices I've seen myself. Depends with jurisdiction. Depends whether in a particular jurisdiction there's a consumer protection law violation, and is it criminalized, is it not, is it just a misrepresentation? So those aspects need to be sort of fleshed out in some sort of a report. I do agree with her, studying the RAA, that yes, this is a problem. The third-party privity contract issue is a lacuna, or at least arguably a lacuna, within the RAA. And so that may be, again, an issue that could be discussed in a issues report if we were to do this, or data collection sort of effort that was to be gone into. The other aspect was there's IP, so I still would like to see what compliance would like to say. Well, have you taken any actions with regard to IP violations against third parties? Because that definitely is a right that ICANN has. And if it hasn't, could that be made part of some sort of an issues report to see what actions can be taken and what's the measure of actions that can be taken for an IP violation for ICANN's trademark, for instance? I like the idea about advisory. Then I guess we should also discuss what the registrar should do, is sending out advisories to their customers. And at the very least, if we do go to an issues report, it will have both. It'll cover collection of data, but it'll also address the issue of the legal analysis with regard to resellers, the RAA, whether we have we can reach out to third parties, and what is the consumer protection law, sort of unfair, deceptive trade practices issue. So I don't see a problem in going into an issues report. It seems like everybody's agreed that there are issues that need to be discussed, data needs to be collected, and it looks like, in my opinion at least, we're moving towards that.
Thanks, Aid. Adrian.
Yeah, I had a question for James, just with respect to the working group. Did you consider what other CCTLDs have done to combat this issue and what resolutions they came to stamping this out?
Am I clear to respond?
Please,
Jeff?
Go.
All right. Okay. We did look at some of them, Adrian. There wasn't a lot of meat there. However, since this working group concluded, there was something going on, I believe, with Nominet and .uk that probably warrants some further study.
The reason I ask is because I know .au had this significantly. I'm just thinking that maybe we should also reach out to the CCNSO in some way and talk to them to see what their experiences are. Because I know in .au we stamped it out fairly easily. And actually the way we did it was to remove expiry dates from whois. Because then no one knew when to send out the notices, right? Because normally people send them out just before the name comes up for renewal. So it's just one way. I'm not saying that's necessarily a solution here, but there are other ways to go about this, and maybe you can get some of that good data from the CCs that are dealing with this issue also.
Thank you. McKinney.
Just wrapping up here, I'm not going to say anything overly exciting. The thing with the fake renewals is that they tend to target the tech innocent. So putting up, having blacklists on ICANN websites is pretty much pointless. They're not going to know who ICANN are. They're not going to Google for the names of these companies. The ones that have had, that we get a lot of and our clients get a lot of, all come from the same company. As James said, they do include all the information, except you'd need to have very, very good eyesight to read all of it, because it's going to be in a tiny font down the bottom. They've already been caught out by the Advertising Standards Authority in the UK. I've asked our clients to report them to the Advertising Standards Authority in Ireland. And the thing is that the only people who don't get these renewal notices are people who are using privacy and proxy services. As a registrar, we don't offer that to our clients, so they get thousands of them, and it ends up where I lose business because of it, which does concern me.
Thank you. Jamie?
Well, I'm a little bit confused here, and I don't mind admitting my difficulties with both with English and with some technicalities or subtleties of this issue, but I have two questions. One is for Michele, and the other is for Pam. Michele said that there is no need to modify the RAA, but at the same time, he said that there is nothing there about false information or false propaganda. That's where ICANN could act on the registrar if the reseller has some do the fake renewal notices. And the question for Pan is how something that is fake can be legitimate? I don't understand that.
Pam, do you want to?
The fake renewal notices is a term I think was used in the report. That's why we just continue to use that terminology. I think a number of us here already acknowledge there's no clear definition. James actually alluded to that. We need definition. You know, these are really misleading and deceptive messages, emails. So we just use fake renewal notices as the kind of common name to call this problem.
Is that good, Jamie? Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
I had Ching next, and James.
I'm actually just offering some of the experience and the sort of the lessons learned at the registry level. We've witnessed some of the accredited registrar, let me put it this way. We've witnessing a reseller which is also a IP or law firms actually based in China. They have engagement with multiple registrars. So when they're sending out fake renewal or new registration notices, they're actually trying to cut deal on the two sides. I mean, either one hand with the clients and also on the other with multiple registrars. So that's the reality and how this business gets done. And until the clients gets this sort of a fake or the new registration notice, before they're taking any action, which means that before they're paying this reseller or this agency, nothing is illegal. To the both party, because no actions being taken. So that's one. And from time to time, we receive IP law firms talk directly to the registry, because in this day's registry, they all have the summarize process. So the registry will have the connection directly with the IP law firms. And from time to time, they come and talk to us what happened and how this, what caused this sort of a premium charges for those services. So we always I shouldn't say always, but from time to time, we advise them, go work with the accredited registrar. Most of the time. If you choose to work with the reseller, and that reseller could be a trademark office or a agency who's handling trademark registration or domain registration, it's their own choices. But we can only, at the registry level, advise them to go through a ICANN accredited registrar. Just as experience sharing.
Thanks, Jing. I think that's very useful. What I propose to do here, because we've still got a lot of discussion on this, apparently, and it is good discussion. I think we're all relieved and happy to be having this discussion. I also think it's very helpful for the people on the working group that are here. So I've had a chat with Marika, who is going to present the next part of our agenda on the best practices. We may push that to Wednesday if that's convenient for everyone. Just let this discussion carry on. So if there's no problem with that, if there is a problem with that, just let me know. And I had James next.
Thanks, Stefan. Just very quickly wanted to respond to Jamie's question of how can something be both a fake and be characterized as legitimate. And I think Pam got that, so you're fine there? Okay, because it is a legitimate transfer offer disguised as a renewal notice, I think is probably the best way, and this is why we need some definitional work.
What I am missing is Ms. Michaela's answer.
He's ready, rearing to go. But I had Zahid next, so if you can just wait 5 more seconds, let's just get Zahid in there and then Michele.
No, I think I just pick up on the last point. That's what I wanted to say. I mean, there's fraudulent and fake, there's deceptive, and there's unfair trade or deceptive trade practices, and they're 3 different things altogether. So it's not, you know, it can't be lumped under one heading of fake renewal notices. And that's where she gets into a problem. How do I take action? There are 3 different types of things, and you're lumping them into one packet. And that's, I take the point that was just made.
McKinney.
Okay, well, just to reply or try to reply to the thing about the RAA. First off, the key thing is that anything that is binding to a registrar is equally binding to their resellers under the RAA. There is no need to make changes. It's covered under the 2009 RAA. I think Jeff already mentioned that earlier. Is that clear? Okay. Now, I think under the 2001 RAA, it wasn't clear, which is where there's a kind of this legacy concern that people have, and I think some people still keep forgetting that most registrars are under the 2009 RAA. The other thing, I suppose, is that if there's a change in consensus policy, then it would be binding to registrars. And personally, I view that as being the place to make these changes rather than tinkering with a contract. Because the contract is something which is quite static. You shouldn't mess around with it. I'd look at it in terms of almost like a constitution, which, at least in my country, is not something that you change that often. Other countries might be different, but at least in my own one, we wouldn't. I would view the consensus policy being the area. And as Saeed said, it is a bit messy because you've got misleading, you've got fake, you've got fraud, there's different things. I do take issue with people who keep on talking about emails relating to all these fake renewal notices, because the ones we see, they're not coming electronically. They're physical, they're hard copy, they look professional, and they confuse the hell out of a lot of our clients, simply because the kind of clients who get confused, they're small to medium-sized companies, possibly bigger. They have somebody who is web-savvy who might have signed up for domains, hosting, and other services, who knows how to, you know, use a computer, turn it on, and pay online. But then the accounts department are the ones who are dealing with everything in paper. They're getting these paper notices. And as James says, it's a valid transfer request because it's following the actual process and everything else. And, you know, people get trapped who are... They're not stupid. I mean, you know, it's incredibly misleading. It's false advertising. a sharp business practice. There's a lot of things you can say, but the thing is, it is an issue. It is something that causes a headache for me personally and for my clients. I can't speak for all registrars, unfortunately.
Thank you. Do you want to come back on this?
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
But is there something missing either in consensus policy or in the RAA about false advertising or not?
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. Is it ICANN's role to decide what is considered false advertising? And if we were to define false advertising, are these companies just going to come up with new and interesting ways to get around that? Because at the moment, the kind of renewal notices that they get clearly state that they are not renewal notices, but they're clearly stated in tiny font down the bottom. So they actually managed to circumvent, they actually put on there in black and white stating what they are and what they aren't. However, a normal person who won't read the small print.
For me, it seems that we have an issue here where we cannot do what we are best in it, that is doing nothing.
I agree. Thank you. So I had Alan and Zahid next. And just to pick up, sorry, on your point, Jamie, Marika's asked me, that she's saying this is great discussion for very useful for the group, but she would like an action item at the end, a concrete action item.
Just one small point with regard to what Michele was saying about the 2009 RAA. It's quite clear in law resellers have the obligations that are passed on to them by the registrar. That is, nothing disappears because it is subcontracted. The difference in the 2009 RA from the previous one is it makes some requirements explicit. I believe it makes requirements about notices and something else explicit. One could read that, and I have been told that some people do read that, that the items that are not listed in this specific list, the short laundry list in 2009 RAA, are therefore excluded from their responsibilities. So I would suggest I the things we're talking about here may well be covered or may not, I'm not sure. But there is an interpretation of the 2009 RAA says by listing some of the items that are passed on, others are implicitly not. So one might want to take a look at that.
Thank you. Zahid?
Thank you. Consumer protection standards, whether they be with respect to fake renewal notices or anything else, are pretty much set. They're there in many countries, and they can be used. It would be difficult to say that, well, you know, we don't know what we're dealing with, and what do we really define it as? I hear a division of views with respect to what the RAA agreement does with in regards to third parties, and some people says that it's there in the agreement, some people are saying it's not. It may be useful for someone to point to a particular clause in the agreement to say, well, this clause says, Pam, you can go after the third parties. If somebody can identify that, that I think would be helpful for the discussion. In any case, even if that does continue to lead to an argument that, well, I can't use this clause, it's not sufficient, it doesn't deal with all these circumstances we have to come up with, then I think we're really sort of left with the last action item, which Marika was asking for. I think we need to move to an issues report that deals with all these various issues. One, collection of data, identifying where the problem is, and then looking at the legal issues, how to address them.
Christina.
Okay, I really, really don't want us to do an issues report until we have data. So my suggestion would be not to volunteer my colleagues in the Registrar Stakeholder Group, but my suggestion, Marika, for a follow-up might be for you to consult with them, get a sense as to the extent that they think it's possible for them to collect some of this data when they think they might be in a position to have enough of it so that it's worth analyzing. And that maybe we just calendar this for, you know, 3 months from now.
The feeling I'm getting is that there's a desire to do something and to get some more data without going the full hog and starting the PDP process, which would be, as we all know, quite resource intensive. So, Marika, is that a sufficient action item for you to go back to either the group or the registrar stakeholder group and see what data collection possibilities there are so that we can further enlighten this discussion.
Yes, I'm happy to do so, and I can liaise with James and Michaela on that, and I guess it might be helpful as well if you know they have any further input on like definitions or you know, possible as well next steps or what might be further needed maybe before launching into PDP. I guess that would be helpful as well for that follow-up discussion.
Great. Okay. If there's no more discussion on those two recs, then we'll just follow through the document. If you turn to the next page, this was the set of items that Marika mentioned earlier on as to not having had any work on them, done on them yet. And you have a column there indicating what result the group's discussions what they came back with in terms of consensus. So there again we have the question of what are the next steps that we'd like to see as a council on these, the possibility being once again if the group itself was unable to reach consensus, is it likely that anyone else would? So on those items that no consensus was reached on, should we just drop them? Should we push them aside? Should we request more work to be done on them? So that those items are on page 3 and page 4 of Marika's document. Is there anything that you want to add, Marika? Okay. Any discussion on this or any suggestions on to next steps? As to next steps. Can you do that?
Yeah, because maybe we want to quickly look, because I think on some of them, you know, the way forward might be quite easy or you know, might not require such a long discussion as on the previous one. I think the first one deals specifically with who is access and actually, you know, ask the council to determine what additional research and processes may be needed to ensure that WHOIS data is accessible in an appropriate, reliable, and enforceable and consistent fashion. And the council should consider how this might relate to other WHOIS efforts. I think it's a specific WHOIS question, and you know, looking at Liz, I don't know if she has any suggestions on how that might link or whether that's something maybe that you know, needs some further consideration to see how that might fold in some of the other WHOIS activities that are going on or whether this is an issue that maybe should wait until some of those studies are maybe completed that might feed into this. And I don't know, I'm looking as well at some of the RAP working group members if they have any specific views on that one. Do you just want me to go through it and then people can come back to the different items? So FIC renewal notices 2, we already spoke about this. This is the request for an issue report. The third issue is the meta issue on collection and dissemination of best practices. For the working group recommends that the GNSO and the larger ICANN community in general create and support structured funded mechanisms for the collection and maintenance of best practices. And this is actually an item that I think links together with the discussion we might now have on Wednesday on this discussion paper on best practices to address malicious abuse, where I think as part of that effort, I think the idea would be to create some kind of mechanism that would support best practices in that area, which might be serve as a model for any kind of follow-up effort that would try to develop a model that could apply for other areas as well. So that's an area where the council might choose to wait for that effort to complete to see if what comes out of that effort might be used in this context as a general model for dealing with best practices. The next one is related to cross TLD registration scam, and the thing that relates to where you get as well notices saying, hey, you own the .com domain name, but you should also register it in all these other TLDs, because otherwise others might do it for you. And here the working group recommends that the GNSO monitor for cross-TLD registration scam abuse in the gTLD space and coordinate research with the community to determine the nature and extent of the problem. The working group believes this issue warrants review, but notes there is not enough data at this time to warrant an issue report or PDP. It is an area where you know, the council doesn't really have any existing mechanisms to monitor or review, so that might warrant some discussion on how that might be done. And see, Christina, yeah.
With regard to the cross TLD registration scams, this is a significant problem that with a particular CCTLD that many trademark owners are receive these. It's my understanding that some of the associations, INTA, for example, may have already done some data collection on this, so it might be worth reaching out, Claudio, to get a sense as to what information they already have. I can tell you that it is restricted to one CC, almost exclusively to one CCTLD in particular, so you know that alone may make it far from representative, but it's a fairly common. I probably get two emails a day from clients. Is this a scam? Yes. You know, next email.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree with Christina. It's a problem. I haven't found that it's not necessarily one CCTLD it's associated with, but usually three or four. In fact, I just got one on June 17th. That was one of those scams. I do think that this is not a GNSO issue alone, that any work we do on this has to be with the CCTLDs. It's not really subject to, it's not really an issue for them under their formal PDPs, but perhaps this is something that we can have a session with them or discuss with them at some point about what they do or if they have any ideas. But this is not a GNSO only issue.
Thank you. Well, if we can, I don't know if you saw, we are working for our session with the CCNSO. We've done some extra preparatory work for this session, for this meeting. And there's a full agenda there already. If we can fit that in, then we will. It is a good item that possibly to have as a discussion with them. Any further comments on this, or do you want to finish the list, Marika?
Yep, happy to continue the list. So there's the next issue, which was also labeled a meta issue, a uniformity of reporting, where the working group recommends that the GNSO and the larger ICANN community in general create and support uniform reporting mechanisms, processes. I'm trying to remember as well. I'm looking at James and Mikey who are talking. And I think Mikey was someone who was spearheading this. What were we talking about exactly when we're talking about uniform reporting processes?
You know, I was one of those. This is Mikey. I was one of those kids in school who never listened during class. Could you repeat the question, please?
It's the second meta issue that the RAP working group recommended on the creating and supporting uniform reporting processes. Well, trying to remember as well exactly what we meant with that one.
Well, just skip over that one.
Okay,
for now,
I can look back. I mean, I think there was, you know, a way of indeed that it would be more uniformity in the way reporting would be done, but I'll check back on that one. Then there was another one, a rough consensus recommendation relating to domain kiting and tasting. It's unclear to what extent domain kiting happens, and the RAP working group doesn't recommend policy development at this time. Again, here they recommend that the council monitor the issue and consider next steps if conditions warrant. So there are two recommendations here that basically ask the council to monitor and review, and I think in we might have some discussion at some point how, for those kind of recommendations, what kind of mechanism the council has or should have to follow up or say, well, you know, we don't think that's part of what we're supposed to do. If an issue, you know, community should come and raise it with us. And then on the next page, those are all the recommendations that, where there was you know, strong support or significant opposition or basically just two complete opposite view. The first one relates to uniformity of contracts, where one view supported the creation of an issue report to evaluate whether a minimum baseline of registration abuse provision should be created for all in-scope ICANN agreements, and if created, how such language would be structured. And the opposite view was that that wasn't required and there shouldn't be an issue report on that. The other recommendation here relates to gripe sites, deceptive and offensive domain names, where there was one recommendations where registries would be encouraged to develop internal best practices that would restrict the registration of offensive strings in order to mitigate the potential harm to consumers and children. And the other view was that that recommendation should be turned down and registries shouldn't be requested to develop such internal best practices. And then the last recommendations, which was where it was divided support, it was relating as well to cyber squatting, where there was one view that supported the initiation of a policy development process by requesting an issue report to investigate the appropriateness and effectiveness of how any rights protection mechanisms that are developed elsewhere in the community, such as the new GTLD program, can be applied to the problem of cyber squatting and in the current GTLD space, and view B basically saying, well, this is premature, should first wait to see how those new mechanisms are working in practice before any PDP is initiated on that issue.
Thank you very much. I would bring to the Council's attention the fact that several of these are recommendations to initiate at least an issue report, which may lead to a PDP process. So we, you know, this is something that we should look at carefully. There are a number of potential PDPs that we could be embarking upon, and one of the things that we might want to do at the wrap-up on Thursday is try and list those areas where we might be starting a PDP, just to have a bit more clarity on those. But either we can have discussion now on those various items, or we can go away, think about it, ask Marika to do the just a short overview on the best practices now, because that is coming out of this as well, so it leads into it pretty well. So it's up to you. Let's just see if there's discussion on those, and if there's not, we'll take it away, think about it for a while, and ask you to do the best practices. So I don't see any hands up, so I think if you can just give us a brief... do you want to stop recording? No, we'll just keep this session as one. I mean, there were two other... we've done all the recs, so, if you can just give Marika 5 seconds to load that presentation... So this was one of, I think it was the third one on page 3.
Yes, that's good.
I'm just referring to the list and saying that the best practices was the third item on page 3.
That is actually one that might be linked to this effort. But the recommendation is on the first page.
Okay.
The one that's...
Thank you.
It's the malicious... I think the official title was...
Well, we already approved going forward with this.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. This is the malicious use of domain names recommendation number 1 that's on the first page. What I was referring to is that there's another recommendation related to best practices overall that might benefit from waiting for this effort to complete for, you know, might have already a model that next effort could benefit from. So, just jumping into this one. So, I think the background we don't need to discuss anymore comes from the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group. It's actually on the meeting in February that the Council agreed to request ICANN staff to prepare a discussion paper on this topic. This is basically what comes straight from that resolution and was also in the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group report, what such an effort should include, but not limited to. I'm not going through each of these, just to give you a few seconds to read through those. Just to recap before going actually into the outline, initially our intent was to release the paper before the Singapore meeting, but due to workload, we weren't able to finalize it. But instead of waiting and not doing anything with it, we thought it might be a good idea to actually bring to you our initial thinking or broad outline of the issues that we are considering as part of this discussion paper to really get your input on, are we thinking along the right lines? Are there any issues we're forgetting that should be included? And get that feedback so we can actually finalize the report and get it back to you hopefully sooner rather than later. So on a general notice, I think the recommendation itself said that we should look at the creation of best practices. So the first question we're actually asking ourselves, like, do we really need to create best practices? Shouldn't we first have a look and see what is actually out there? So what are the existing industry best practices, and you know, how would they fit with this effort? And we'll come back to that later. I don't know if Steve Shang is actually here, because he's helped me on that effort, and he can provide more details on that if you like. And as well, like, considering the scope and applicability of those industry best practices, you know, should any kind of effort in this regard, should it, you know, make divisions between, you know, kind of registries or registrars that might be helped by these best practices? Would you, for example, have a set of best practices that would be applicable to big registries or small registrars or new GTLD registries? Is there any kind of that foreseen, or would that be helpful in any kind of context, or would we just look at developing, you know, these are best practices for everyone? We're talking about non-binding best practices, but again, there's no real definition in the Registration Abuse Working Group report or the resolution about what this non-binding nature means. You could look at different kind of non-binding best practices. For example, just the kind of where you just put them out and say, here, you know, do whatever with it, whatever you want. You could, for example, look at a seals of approval kind of best practices. You know, that those registrars that adopt the best practices get a specific seal that shows that they have adopted those best practices. You could look, for example, at inclusion of in the code of conduct for registrars and registries, where you say, well, you know, we think as part of a code of conduct, these should be a part of you know, how registries and registrars operate. You could look at a model as well where they are non-binding, but once adopted, then you do enforce them and, you know, audit and make sure that they are followed. So there are different ways you could look at the non-binding nature, and I guess that's, again, you know, a discussion item, and where further input, you know, is welcomed and needed. As well, what could be the role of ICANN in this context? I mean, I think now we're in the process of, you know, facilitating the discussion on this, you know, writing the discussion paper. But there are other things that ICANN could do in this context, you know, maintaining best practices, you know, looking at ways of endorsing, providing incentives, publishing these, keeping them up to date, you know, revising, providing training, and, for example, enforcing. If you would go to a model where, you know, people that adopt them, they are enforceable at that stage, you would need as well a mechanism to actually enforce those. So there are different, you know, options there that would need to be considered. So then as well, the resolution itself talks about, you know, how such an initiative should be undertaken. So they are looking at ICANN resources, you know, beyond the normal policy staff support for such an initiative. What other kind of resources are required? You know, do you need, would experts be needed? Should ICANN set up specific mechanisms to you know, maintain best practices, run them? The resolution also talks about the community process, but again, no real details are provided there, so any next steps would consider as well, how would such a community process look? Would you go for the standard working group that looks at these issues and works them through? You might consider as well looking more at you know, advisory kind of group, where you really invite experts, for example, members from ESSEC or those that have been involved in developing best practices in other environments, to, you know, provide advice to the council on how such a you know, a best practices model could look and how you make it work. So again, that's an issue that needs further consideration. Security and trust is something that the RAP working group talked about as well. You know, you might need specific mechanisms to exchange information or experiences. So that's something that needs to be taken into account as well in any further discussions in this area. The scope of the best practices effort, I mean, as you saw on the previous slide, there were a number of subjects that were identified by the RAP working group that should be considered. There might be other areas. If you'll see on the next pages, we've identified already a number of best practices that are derived from different papers and initiatives from either within ICANN, such as ESSEC, or other groups like APWG, that might be applicable. And on the basis of that, we found as well some other areas that might be suitable for inclusion. And then looking as well at resellers, you know, we spoke already about it before. I mean, in principle, of course, the scope of such an initiative is limited to ICANN-accredited registrars and registries. But this initiative might also want to consider how the adoption of best practices can be promoted vis-a-vis resellers, as they're often involved in those processes as well. So that's another question that we want to raise. So there are some other issues that weren't specifically called out in the resolution or in the RAP working group report, but that through our internal discussions and thinking about this issue, we want to include and raise for further consideration. Such, for example, there are many industries that have best practices, that have systems in place for developing them, for promoting them, for enforcing them. So we might want to look at those industry best practices and see whether those are applicable or could be adapted in a way that would suit the domain name industry. We need to look as well at the level of granularity that would be provided. How much in detail do you want to go in these best practices? How broad do you want to keep them? How do you want to manage the updating and ongoing improvements? As we're looking at malicious abuse, that's an area where things change very rapidly. How can you make sure that best practices that you put a lot of effort in developing and creating, that they're not immediately outdated and no longer of use. Then there's as well sensitivity that organizations might have in disclosing practices that they're using, either for competitive reasons or for reasons that if you put out how you're addressing abuse, the abuser of course has a path as well how they can maybe avoid those. Although at the same time, I think there are many researchers that are sharing a lot of information, because I think many assume as well that the bad guys already know how things can be addressed and what ways are around it, so no use of hiding that. I think very important as well, like once we come to agreement on what those how those best practices should look, what can be done to promote those best practices and disseminate them among interested parties. I think very important as well to measure effectiveness. As well, are there any specific incentives that can be provided to promote the adoption? I think we should look as well at how can we give other ICANN bodies and as well working groups easy access to those best practices, and how can best practices be added that, for example, come out of certain working groups? Because we've seen several working groups that are actually instead of consensus policy recommendations also provide best practices recommendations, but the current model, we don't really have a home for them apart from saying, hey, we think this is great, do something with it. And I think very important as well, any effort in this regard, we need to look at measuring the adoption rate and the actual effectiveness of those best practices. It's very nice to have best practices out there, but if no one adopts them, or if in the end of the day they turn out to be non-effective for addressing the abuse they were intended to address, changes need to be made. And then there were some other questions that were raised in the context, you need to look at as well means to identify and verify trusted abuse reporters. How can you make sure that someone's reporting abuse is saying who they are? And that links as well to the question of liability. If someone asks you to take down websites, how can you make sure that the person is a trusted abuse reporter, and how can you deal with situations where you might take down the wrong site? And I think there are some efforts in other environments going on that might feed into these kind of discussion points. So I don't know, Steve here? Otherwise, I'll just quickly cover this. As said, Steve Shang has helped on this specific part of the discussion paper that we're working on. So basically looking at the preliminary inventory of best practices. So these are the sources of the different documents he has looked at that might provide a starting point for such an initiative of looking at best practices and categorizing those. So there's several ASAC reports. The APWG has put out an anti-phishing best practices report. He's looked as well at various policies that currently exist at different registries and registrars. There's some lessons that came out of the Configure working group, and the MAWG working group also provided some anti-phishing best practices for ISPs and mailbox providers. So on the basis of that review, he actually distilled a number of best practices. And we're not saying that these should be the best practices that need to be adopted or implemented or enforced. We're just saying, based on what is already out there, these are some of the best practices that don't need to be developed on a separate basis. This is work that has already been done by other bodies, either within ICANN or I think as well with ICANN participants and some of the other groups, that any such initiative might benefit from without having to reinvent the wheel. this is, I think, my last slide. So just as a next steps, you know, the idea was of this presentation to get your views and input, and you know, I know it's a lot of to digest, so you know, I don't expect all of you now to share your views and give points, but please, if you have any items you think we should consider or any specific views on the items we've presented here, you know, feel free to send that to me in an email or you know, talk to me during the week. We'll also have a workshop on Thursday from 11 to 12:30, where a couple of you will present your view from your perspective. So we have, I think, from the different parts of the community. You know, we have contracted parties, non-contracted parties, people that have been involved in development of best practices in other environments participate in that session to give you know, their perspective on this this issue. So based on those discussions, we hope to take all that input, update the report. As well, propose some concrete steps for the GNSO Council to consider as next steps, going forward on this initiative, and submit the paper.
Thank you very much for that, Marika. Very useful. So I see some hands going up. So we'll have a quick discussion on this, and just a reminder that the next session that we're going to have is also one where I expect there'll be good discussion. It's a format that we're trying here, which is a kind of open discussion session where we plan to discuss our motions and possibly other things. And that's due to start in 9 minutes. We'll probably have a short break in between, but and then we'll have our working lunch. So can I take a cue? I had Christina first, then Wolf and Jamie. Christina.
Marika, can you go back to the slide that had the table of the best practices that have... Okay, yeah, this one. In its current form, does the discussion paper go through each of these and identify or measure or report on the acceptance and application of these best practices by the intended group? And if not, why not?
I don't think it does because we don't have that information. I think for some, I don't know if... we need to defer to Steve, but what I recall, it basically explains what the best practice is about, by who it was developed, but I don't think we have access to that information on by whom it was adopted or...
Because from my perspective, I think it would be very helpful to have a sense as to the extent that there already are best practices out there that have been developed by other organizations for members of the community. Before we start our own effort, let's find out to what extent what's already out there is being adopted, because I guess at a certain level, my initial reaction is I'm not sure I see the utility of spending more time on this if there's already this whole laundry list out there that hasn't been adopted. And again, that's, maybe that gets into the question of the enforcement point that you raised, which I'm still not clear on, but we can talk about it.
Right. I think these come all from documents that have been developed in different contexts. So I think what we've done so far is basically try to distill from those different documents what might be best practice that it could be considered in this context. And I agree. I think if we feel that these are the right ones, there's no need to rewrite them, but you still need to look at a mechanism of, so how do you promote these? How do you indeed measure how these are adopted and by whom? Are they effective? Are they achieving the goal that you set yourself out to do? So
right, and I didn't mean to suggest that we should use these instead of, or say, we love this APWG best practice, the top one, we're going to apply that here. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is let's find out to what extent it's actually being implemented as a best practice by the intended audience, because if it's not, then let's find out why not before we start going down the road of making our own recommendations for best practices.
Jeff, do you want to?
Yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding here. These are categories of practices. These are not, they have not, ICANN staff has not said these are best practices. Nobody has made an evaluation as to whether these are best practices or not. These here are categories. In other words, if you look at the third from the bottom, PIR, affiliates, Newstar, and GoDaddy have anti-abuse policies. Whether they are, quote, best practices or not is not something that's ever been evaluated. I'd like to think that Newstar's implementing something that's best practice. So I think there's a little bit, this list is not, this is what ICANN staff has determined to be best practices. This list is a category, is a list of categories of the types of practices that a group can look into to see whether they would recommend that others implement those.
That clarification is helpful, but I still think, for example, if APWG has a recommendation, whether or not ICANN is saying it's a best practice, if APWG is saying, here is our recommended best practice for investigating domain and registrations, name, service, blah, 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 if that's what APWG has identified as its own best practice, let's find out to what extent it's actually been adopted before we start thinking about whether or not it makes sense to have our own iteration of it.
Well, I think what APWG has come out with a paper saying, we think registries should do A, B, C, and D. It's not best practice for what APWG does itself. Right? So we need to evaluate whether, A, we think APWG's recommendations are credible or not. I think they are. But, you know, we need to go through that whole thing to see whether these indeed are, just because one group says they think this is best practice or not, doesn't mean that others may agree or disagree.
But that's fine. Let's know that, I guess, is my point. Before we start our own effort of trying to develop our own best practices, if, you know, let's say for purposes of discussion here that the vast majority of members of the registrar stakeholder group have decided for whatever reason not to do this, I'd like to find out why before we start thinking about whether we want to recommend in this category of subject area our own best practice. Because there's no point in reinventing the wheel if the wheel that we invent is not going to work just like the original one does.
Okay. Can I move down the queue? I have Wolf, then Jamie, then Jeff. You've just spoken. Margie, Wendy, and McKay. So, Wolf.
No, thank you. That was my question.
Thank you. Jamie.
I have a consideration and then a question that I would address not only to Marika but to all of us. I think when this issue about best practices comes around, it involves two aspects. One is the technical aspect that I think is covered by those by this list. But the main issue here is the issue about efficacy or effectiveness. And this is not technical. This is about enforcement. And I think the incentive is not enough. A seal is not enough. Some kind of punishment, mild it can be, it's necessary. And I ask if ICANN could put on an ethics council or something like that that would operate in an effective, reactive mode. Since we are not proactive, we can be effectively reactive. So responding to the community through a formal mechanism of the word is missing for me, but somebody that could feel that some of these published best practices is not being followed by some of the registrar or registries of the contracted parties, or could ask ICANN to or this ethics council to take some action that could be a mild some form of in front of the RAA or something like that. My question is this kind of thing possible or not? Am I just?
I don't know who you're expecting an answer from. I can tell you there's a few funny faces around the room hearing your suggestion, but some of them probably enjoy it and others don't. But I think an ethics council punishment for people that don't follow best practices is far out of the reach of this topic. But perhaps others want to speak to that. We'll see as we work down the queue. Jeff, I had you next.
Yeah, to address, I just want to remind everyone what the resolution that the council passed was for the development of non-binding best practices. So the concept of punishment is not in there. That kind of goes against the whole nature of developing best practices. Right. So we and I also want to caution that even though Marika used the term best practices in all this, no one's made a determination as to whether these are truly the best practices or not. That's something that we all need to kind of determine. I heard what you said, Christina. If the APWG is recommending something, I think your comment was, well, we should find out who's implementing that or why. I think the issue is the APWG, I would say that most registrars are probably not implementing the APWG recommendations, not because they don't want to, not because they don't, it's never been presented to them as something to follow. Just because the APWG put something on its website that's saying we think this is the best or we think these are things that registries and registrars should do, doesn't mean anyone's going to go, oh, well, it's the APWG, we should now do it. But, you know, right, so, okay, so it's a non-binding nature. I will say, with respect to registries, at least with the APWG, some of their recommendations that were developed, I think, were a little unrealistic. Again, Neustar's got a very effective anti-abuse policy. We don't implement the APWG because we don't think it's very realistic. They tried to put in a bunch of third parties in there and dispute resolutions and things that just weren't. I'll give you an example. APWG recommended essentially that that registries basically take in what APWG says is malware and then take down the site. And it recommended that registries did not necessarily have to perform independent verification of the APWG results. Neustar came out after that recommendation and said, no, we will not adhere to that because Neustar wants to independently verify any results before we take down any websites for malware. That's against the APWG recommendation, but we found that it works quite effectively. So you'll find lots of different things. So I understand what you're saying, that we should look at the APWG recommendations, but I don't think it's a matter of saying who's following it and why. I think it's just one input into many of a whole discussion process.
Okay. I still have a number of people in the queue. We're over time. I'm going to ask you to be extremely brief, and I'm cutting the queue off here. So I have Margie, Wendy, Michele, and Mikey.
Okay, it might be hard to be brief, but we'll talk about it more in the workshop. I guess one of the questions we had as staff is really, what is a best practice? And I agree with what Jeff was saying, that a lot of the things that are on this list are practices, not necessarily best practices yet. And if you look at the definition of what a best practice is, it's something that's been generally accepted, proven over time, you know, accepted in an industry. And so as we tackled this issue of how do you develop best practices, we actually took a look at other industries to see what other industries, for example, the telecom industry has done to develop best practices. And it's extensive. I mean, some of you who work in other industries know that it's not as simple as just putting a list together and saying, here it is, go follow it. And even the ESSAC recommendations, if you talk to ESSAC members, they may not necessarily say it's a best practice. They might say it is a practice, and they'd like to see how it's implemented in the industry and what the adoption rate is and what the problems are. But, you know, we have to be really careful with, you know, definitions and terminology, because when we talk about something like best practice, it's a very specific thing, and we want to make sure we're all on the same page. And so, you know, I'd like to probably address other issues like the non-binding, but we can talk about that more in the workshop. It's just, it's not a simple project, and what we're really trying to show with the slide deck is the complexity of the issues that we're really talking about here.
Thanks. Wendy.
Thanks. I think there are a lot of different ways of conceiving this challenge, and I would suggest that we think of ICANN as perhaps a convening spot for people to discuss good practices and to share experiences around those practices, but not try for ICANN to enforce any set of practices as best practices. Among the practices that I would like from a registrant perspective to add to the list would be transparency around the response to complaints and transparency toward the registrant about under what terms might they lose a domain or lose access to a domain for the registrant's interest in stability and security of access to that domain name.
McKinney.
Just speaking to Christina's comments there about best practices, I mean, with all due respect, Christina, as a registrar, it's impossible for us to know about every single possible recommendation that APWG may or may not have made over the last 15 years or whatever length of time. I mean, the problem from as a registrar, I can keep track of certain things. If I can send put something up on their website, if SSAC puts something up on their section of the ICANN website, I might not even see it. But there's no way for me to track every single recommendation that's come out of APWG or otherwise. I mean, we might be doing things that they might have suggested or might not, for reasons that Jeff has outlined as well, but there's no way for us to know. Because it's just there's no reason.
And that's important information to have. I mean, if the answer is that it's a communication issue, that people just don't know about it, but now that I know about it, maybe I'll do it. I'm just trying to make sure that we don't go down a rabbit hole here. In other words, let's make sure that we're actually embarking on an effort that is going to add some real value and utility.
Okay, can you? Yep. This is not a discussion. We're out of time. So, Mikey, do you want to close this off, and then we'll move on to the next session? Thank you.
Thanks, Stefan. This is Mikey. I was on the working group along with James, and what we were trying to do with this was start something new, start something safe, start something controllable, where the organizations that meet at ICANN, registrars, registries, registrants, etc., could find some safe, neutral ground to start building something that's not in policy, but that could dramatically improve the effectiveness of the organization as a whole. So I think that this deck is a great example of showing why this is complicated, but let's make sure that we don't get confused when those lists of best practices are up there. Those are examples of best practices. They are not a list of recommended best practices. What we're trying to create here is a process whereby these organizations can meet and openly discuss things without the pressure of policy being created. So it's sort of creating another tier in the organization here. That's all.
Thank you. Thank you all for some very good discussion around this. Let's just have a very short 5-minute break, and then we'll move into our general discussion session. So we'll end this session now, operator, and start again in 5 minutes. Thank you.
And thank you for participating in today's conference. You may now disconnect at this time.